Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf's Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone Show this evening.
Listen, good afternoon and welcome to the Water Zone. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Starr, along with the best host, Mr. Chris Davies. Chris is here. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Rob. How you doing? I mean, this is great, Rob, because we're in the same place, and I think this is the first time we've had a show done in the same location with us sitting next to each other in probably 8-9 months.
Maybe. Yeah.
So well, it's a good thing to have.
Yep, it is. So how's the weather? Well, I should
thank you.
You've got the same weather as I do. Okay. How was your trip out here?
It was all right, right? And today, back in Southern California, it's windy as heck. We got Santa Ana winds back there, and I just put up a new gazebo, so I tied the thing down before I left.
Good idea.
Because it was not secured anyway. I just got it built, so it's just sitting on the ground. So
they had a storm last year where somebody was doing the same thing, except they didn't tie it down.
Yeah.
It flew over the block wall fences in the neighbor's yard.
Yes, and it's ruined.
Yes, totally ruined.
Yeah.
And plus they damaged other people's
houses. Yeah,
so,
and it's ruined.
I wonder if we have Miss Chris Austin. Are you joining us?
No, but she's Chris? Waiting online. Yeah.
Oh. I guess she can't get in either. We're calling in versus the internet because there seems to be an internet problem with our connection portal.
Yep.
But at least we're onto the studio. Maybe we can call her, but... Eric, we got an interview that we did with a gentleman named Tom Lucas, and probably is a good time to play that now instead of being the featured guest portion. So if you could get that rolling, and that would be wonderful, and then we'll go to commercial after that.
Well, hello, everyone, and a big thanks to our listeners and our sponsors, as always. Today on The Water Zone, we have an opportunity to get some inside views on the nursery business with our guest, Tom Lucas. Tom, who is with Performance Nurseries here in Southern California, is going to talk to Rob and I about the nursery business. Tom, welcome to the Water Zone.
Good morning.
Glad to have you on for sure, buddy. So listen, we're gonna ask you a question. We do this of all of our guests because there's usually an interesting story there. But, you know, back in the beginning when your hair was long and rock and roll was king, you know, what got you into this business in the beginning?
So I would say that it was back at Park Nursery, and minimum wage was $2.35 an hour, and customers would come in and ask, does anybody go home and you know, help plant these plants? So I'd always offer. There were salesmen at Park Nursery that would give them my number, and I'd do that on after work or during the week after school.
We have something in common, buddy, because like you, I started off on the business end of a shovel as well.
Well, that's great. So I would say that being in the nursery business itself was not an exciting thing for myself. I thought I would never want to deal with homeowners and have the, you know, opportunity to tell them, you know, 17 times about the same questions that they would ask. But, you know, later on in life, I realized how much enjoyment that I get out of working, you know, retail on a Saturday or Sunday, you know, morning and people coming in. And, you know, if it's from aphids to, you know, my tree hasn't really had any avocados. So at this point in my life, I'm primarily a wholesale grower, and I sell to landscape contractors, gardeners, and homeowners and other nurseries, and then sometimes to developers on contract grow.
Well, welcome to the Water Zone. I'm Rob. How are you doing today? Good?
Great. Thank you.
The business that you have, I know it's been going on for over 30 years, and how did that start?
So the nursery business started by me having a gardening landscape business out of my home in North Long Beach. And we had four work trucks that would start every morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so I would start my guys off, and my neighbors started to complain, and code enforcement came out in Long Beach. And at that point I thought I better come up with a better solution. I started looking for industrial buildings to move my business to, and they were quite expensive. And I always thought, God, wouldn't it be great? I'm working for Trammell Crow, S&S Construction. I have some nice contracts. If I had some plant material, I could actually be in the nursery business, also in the landscape maintenance business. So I set out to look for Edison property, which was not really available at that point. So I looked at oil property. And at one point in my life, I made $12 an hour working for an oil company. I went to Mr. Davis, and he suggested that perfect opportunity that I could rent some of the land that they have at oil operators right off the 405 and the 710 freeway in Long Beach. And I moved in a office trailer, ship containers, and I started planting plants. So this was back in, I think it was in 83, 84. And so that was my start into the nursery business as it is today. You know, Performance Nursery was really developed on hiding my equipment. So it was just, a hobby that turned into a business.
Are you now seeing, all the stuff that's happened in our industry and regulation and turf to native and all this stuff? Are you starting to see this change hit the nursery business, or is it something that's been evolving over time?
Well, unfortunately, when California decided, and it was the only state around that decided to get rid of all our diesel trucks, I mean, I now rent from Penske and spend $2,500 plus, 10 cents a mile. And the different regulations on, water and, I always say that, plants don't waste water. It's how you apply it. We have the technology. There's great irrigation companies that have come up with some great ways to save money and time. And being able to have rain gauges and, smart clocks that can shut it off based on the evaporation. And at this point, I think we've allowed government to manipulate. I believe in world natives. And so I don't think a plant wastes water. I think it's how you apply it. And so at this point, it's tough enough just being in California. We have a construction slowdown, I think. You go to Arizona, any other state, probably just surrounding us, and everybody's leaving California. So it's difficult. You're always doing a manipulation of plant material, but when California natives don't grow that well in your own nursery, sometimes you wonder how they're going to get out there on small lot lines and do well. So those are all great questions. And, I haven't figured out life yet. I've been in the nursery business probably over 35 years. And then
I tell you, I've got, I'm one of the guys, right? So I did the transition from turf to native, at first many years ago, 15 years ago, plus Rob's been to my house. He's seen my garden, and I've had a pretty good run at it, Tom. I've got to tell you, I've been very lucky, right? I've talked to lots of people. I live around Southern California, close to the California native gardens here in Claremont, California, and I've got a lot of colleagues over there, and I've heard all these war stories about being unsuccessful and native plants not doing well and stuff like that. I got to tell you, I've done pretty well. Is that generally it, or have you heard war stories too about people being unsuccessful with turf to native conversions?
I think it's one of those things that you, world natives would be a little bit easier, but I would definitely say that, you start using Toyons, or there's bulletproof plants that are successful in your garden. If you're looking for a butterfly garden or something along those lines, there's some items that really do well. There's other plants that actually are, harder to get started. You want to make sure that you're not doing it. And, there's, probably about 7-8 months out of the year that you really want to plant natives. And so when you have a construction site that they're trying to sell something, I remember just even being educated on developers and planting deciduous trees and them having a hard time during the wintertime selling the project out. And so, it's just one of those, when they do work, they work great. They were great on slopes, and I think that sometimes parkways could be a great thing. And just, depending on the irrigation, a lot of times these days, drip or hose irrigation is better than overhead. And I think that plants are great. I mean, I would love to sell more plants, take out more turf and plants, sell, more plants. But I think that turf actually has, when I see people putting in plastic grass and putting down rock and just converting their garden over because water and sewage cost so much, and especially with them saying these are the things that we should do, I would have to disagree with that. I believe in turf just on, larger projects for dust control, also for, just having the ability to, you know, kind of cool down the planet. So, you know, and I don't really sell grass. So I'm a little bit prejudiced there. I don't think we have to get rid of everything. I think sometimes we have the water. We just need to build the infrastructure. We have the different bond projects that we have. And you have anti-growth in California. People have decided, hey, we really don't want to have any neighbors. And we probably, you know, our kids can move to Texas or something. And we'll cut down the population in California since it's so beautiful here. I think that, you know, it's eventually it's catching up. So,
yeah,
you know, it's,
yeah, I agree. You know, just going to look at, sorry, Rob, I'll just give me 1 second here, kind of follow up on that one, if you will, because I want to follow up on something you said, Tom, and that's, you know, plants don't waste water, essentially people do, right? So, I mean, it's great. And I agree with you. There's natives that are, you know, they're, you know, the basic bellwether types that that do well, Toyon, Manzanita, Ceanothus, most salvias, for example, everybody can be fairly successful. At least here in Southern California and in our couple of zones here. But let's look at that. Let's look at the irrigation side of native planting plants, because you said sometimes better than overhead watering is hose or drip. I didn't have an irrigation system put in when I did my first conversion many years ago, but I just did a recent one in my backyard. And because I was part of a rebate program, one of the qualifications that was that I had to put in an irrigation system. So what do you think about that? Is it, you know, it's a required if you're going to qualify for a rebate?
Well, I think that you're very talented, and I don't know your garden yet. I'd like to be invited over for that glass of wine someday. But that being said, you know, being consistent, people always say, you know, do you have a green thumb? And I said, not really, but it's the consistency of watering. And, you know, sometimes people don't even believe in fertilizer these days. And there's other things that we can use. But in that sense, I think that you're probably 1 out of 100 that have the ability to get out there and water and irrigate. Sometimes I think for chances at the very beginning, you know, natives are going to need some supplemental water, and especially at the very beginning, I always tell people it's kind of like a sponge in your sink. If it's really hard, the water's going to bounce off it. The soil itself, it would be the same idea. If you haven't done anything with your soil recently and you're digging, I think that filling it up with, you know, with water and letting it saturate, maybe use some grow power or some other, you know, soil amendment to basically break. We have from clay to sand, you know, there's, you know, in Southern California, there's all regions, and there could be some that just maybe even down in Laguna to up in Palos Verdes that, you know, you just have some poor soil. But that being said, I think that irrigation, I would, you know, if I were the people giving away the money, I'd require them to have a clock. I'd require them to have irrigation. But people like yourself that, you know, get out there, and all you have to do is be a consistent person until those plants get established. I mean, the rainwater this year has been great. It's leaching all our salts out of our soil. It's just a great thing when we have these heavier flows. And if you have a garden and you don't have runoff, that's a wonderful thing. I definitely believe in mulch. We're doing a lot more green waste these days, and I'm a big believer in knocking out weeds with the mulch that you could purchase from, maybe from a trash company or something along those lines. Sometimes it does come with some plastic, some residue that, you know, you prefer not seeing, you know, but there's a lot of natural material out there. But I'm definitely a big green waste person that believes in, you know, I recycle all my nursery containers. I'd love to have them have that, you know, chop it back up and convert it back into containers again. That would be a blessing. And also I separate my green waste. Usually I'll just remulch it again. And in just with any soil or anything like that, I'll just bring it into the environment. And I think that's a great way for yourself or others that can have water retention, you know, having a thicker mulch. And usually the nitrate, you know, not having fertilizer, it will eventually turn into fertilizer once the mulch breaks down. But right up front, it's going to be a nitro burn on any kind of weeds that come up. It will sucked out any of the nitrogen out of the soil for any of the weeds, and I find it to be a great source later on in life of just the worms and everybody else loving the material that you put down in your soil.
So, Tom, how did the recent drought and the drought a couple of years back, did it affect your business very much?
We changed our name with an extra tagline of Drought Center. So we tried to, you know, educate people that not planting was not an option. I think that we have plenty of water in California. It's just how do we decide? And sometimes, you know, I come from the ag side. I was in ag leadership. I was class of 34. You know, we have wine guys. We have, you know, cotton, alfalfa. We have all sorts of people, you know, growing crops. And I think sometimes, you know, some of the crops that we choose are another great way to keep the soil in check. But on the other hand, when you start growing, you know, alfalfa and some of these higher usage for water out in the desert, we might be able to take that water and sell it back to, you know, they're looking for a profit center. I mean, it's all about money sometimes. So sometimes I think we could sell some of that water back to, you know, our residential folk. And we could, you know, definitely, we want more plants, not less plants. I think that's a solution to, if we do have any greenhouse warming or anything else, we really don't want to heat up the planet any further. And so I say that it's our responsibility as good stewards of the earth to plant and have a green environment. We've been convinced that we live in a desert. So, you know, our range land now is desert. So I think that, you know, we just need to build the infrastructure. Again, we haven't really, probably our last project was somewhere in the 80s with Paris, you know, our water, you know, and we continue to grow. We have, you know, about $1.5 billion down in Orange County where they've come up with a new desal plant recycling, you know, the water, which is a great thing. I think we need another inexpensive electricity cost. Right now, electricity is so expensive that's, you know, part of the cost of pumping our water out of the ground. And I think it's right now it's getting to the point where people really, you know, can't afford to pay for the water. And they've made it an incentive not to use anything. They want you to, you know, basically live in the desert, which doesn't really make sense to me. We need to cool down the planet.
All right. Looks like Rob's frozen on the screen there. So so let me go back to a comment you made a little bit earlier about manufacturers being able to, you know, help along the way with products and developments that they've made. Smart irrigation, right? Smart technology. That's kind of a buzzword today, right? What's your viewpoint on that? Have you seen it make a difference?
Well, I'm hoping. I haven't seen studies. I think that people doing audits, it definitely will help. You know, it's the water coverage and just having the ability to have a clock shut off and turn back on, knowing, you know, what the moisture content is in the soil. I think that it's a great product. It's something now that our kids are, you know, on their phones, and it will just, they can automatically shut off their clock. They don't have to go in their garage and turn it off. I think sometimes we end up leaving, you know, water on when we don't need to. And I think any way that we could have it shut off by itself and turn back on is great. You know, I haven't found rain sensors to work that great, but it's definitely a great source. You know, it fills up the cavity. The cavity fills up to a certain point. It shuts it off on the clock. It evaporates and, you know, turns back on again. So just even having different regions now and knowing, you know, maybe how much sunlight that we have and the ability to have a clock, you know, have the technology. I think we've just started the process. I think there's going to be some additional great products that come out in the future. And I think, you know, sometimes having water in the ground that you can pump back out is a wonderful thing. It cleans up the soil.
Going back to your question or your statement about desalination, you know, technology is changing from, you know, from 20 years ago. I mean, desal is popular all over the world. But as you said, one of the two things are, how do you get rid of the brine, and two, the cost of electricity to pump. Chris and I had on the show a while back, probably a year ago, an engineer who created a new type of desal plant that uses solar. And they're putting it out here, three systems, mini systems out in Arizona to do. But and Israel, just so we all know, they've been experimenting with different types of engineering plants and crops because of the salinity in the water in the Middle East and such. And they're looking at developing, and they have developed some things to help grow crops even with salinity. With that, but do you, going back and also going back to the natives and the rural natives and things, what is your view, because it depends on who you talk to and everybody has a different opinion and expertise, overhead or in ground watering, which do you think they need the best of, or which works the best that you've seen?
I would say turf is great just for overhead, and having full coverage is very important. But, you know, again, as long as you don't have, you know, sometimes the only way that you know something's died is in the, or I should say, when something dies in the irrigation, you realize that that head got cut off or it got clogged up. You know, you really have to be in touch with, you know, your landscaped area. So sometimes I prefer bubblers. You know, it'll be a schedule 80 riser coming up with a bubbler, and then having the ability to irrigate. But that being said, I think sometimes having some drip tubing now that is a little bit less essential for squirrels and rabbits to eat. That's the only problem that I really see is, you know, conventionally.
You do have clogging of some of the emitters in drip tubing. I know one company has a product which is called Root Guard, and it protects the roots from entering the emitter hole and blocking it. So I mean, there's, and you're right about animals chewing them up. I mean, that's another big deal that's in the industry that's got to do. But I think, you know, what used to take 20 years for something to come out with a new technology, I kind of almost see it almost every 6 to 9 months something new comes out to help prevent.
And I think that's exciting. I really feel like, you know, just let's run into the problems and we can solve them. And we've got young minds that are working. I would love to see the colleges get back to more of a horticulture program, landscape architect. You know, right now I see the colleges now are more of an enforcement, and they're going in and you know, if it's the water police or just even they're going more of an environmental kind of policeman, you know, and we don't really have those horticulturists that are graduating and really taking it to the next level. I think that I look forward to seeing, you know, seeing more people in our green industry, and I think it's a great industry. I've been very fortunate to be part of it. I've been a profit center for myself, but with that being said, I just enjoy what I do. I get to go to work every day. And I don't think there's a lot of people that can say that.
No, I agree. I would like to see more classes in high schools, more of the trades back into the high school instead of them taking them all out. Because there's people that aren't cut out to go to college or don't want to go to college. And there's things that you can make really a good wage working in the irrigation or nursery or some of the other type industries. But I'd like to see more of that and more money given to the elementary and high schools to start teaching that more and offering it and allowing it to be a course.
I think that's brilliant that you bring that up. I think just trade schools itself, for some reason, we've decided that all kids should go to college, which is not true. I know that I went to a trade school. It was Long Beach. They had a great program. It was over at the tree farm. It was three periods a day. And that's how I got started. Dan Wheeler is my teacher, and we started with soils and fertilizing chemicals and plant ID, and it was one of those things that I never thought it would turn into a career. It was just something I enjoyed doing, and what a great facility it was. You know, I look back now and think, geez, the park is still there. I mean, you know, there's my sister actually has a vegetable garden right where some of the, they were planting trees at the time, the city of Long Beach. and they'd have a tree spade, and they would sell mature trees, or not necessarily sell, but they would go out to parks and make a hole and then plant these mature trees. It never really took off like it should have, but it was definitely a wonderful opportunity. And I think that the San Fernando Valley, if you look at the Mickey Strauss's of the world and just even the Bert Sperbers, they all started in some kind of horticulture program that was provided to them by the education. And to think of, the bright views of the world and having a $2 billion, business, and it started with somebody teaching horticulture, what a blessing that has provided all those jobs and the industry. It's just an amazing opportunity.
Well, I have just two short questions, then I'm going to turn the rest over to Chris, because they kind of follow. So on your website, you have a picture of a cute dog holding a big daisy. Is that your dog?
So I do have golden retrievers. So there's probably a total of five of them. And so, someday, maybe that might be my retirement of bringing, joy to people with dogs. I've never made $1 off it. I normally give them to, I'm a big believer in Pathways for Independence and other different organizations out there. And so they're all looking to raise money. And, at a silent auction, you could raise as much as, $6,000 for a dog. So sometimes, bringing joy to people, would be great. And especially military, maybe coming back and needing companion, or just even CNI dogs, and never know exactly, where I'm going to end up. When I grow up, I want a beautiful garden, and I want to spoil myself. And then I'd like to still try to give back to the industry, and also just to, if it's the Boys and Girls Club, or if it's, Senior Concern, or any of these other groups that do wonderful things. And I've been a Rotarian now over 30 years, and I'm an Elk also, and they're just great organizations that people, could get involved with and be able to provide for our communities.
Cool. And I had seen a little tweet on somebody named Fernando that works for you. He's still working for you.
He
got great reviews from your customers. So you have a good staff.
Well, he's an amazing person. I feel very fortunate. My company itself, it's all about the people. And so, Fernando is definitely one of those people that is amazing. But, there's the Mickeys, and there's the, Miguel's, and there's the Jorge's. And, I'm down to about 45 employees at this point in my life. We just supplied Costco with 42,000 trees in January. And they were all fruit trees, deciduous, bearing, peaches and plums and nectarines, and just the staff that makes it happen. I know that I'm in a nonprofit organization. Unfortunately, I have not been really profitable in the nursery business, just being in California. I think I need somebody to take over the helm. And Fernando would be definitely one of those guys. I've offered five key people in my organization 2% of the business, which would make it 10%. And I just haven't convinced them that, that would be the best thing for them. Part of our company got sold to Devil Mountain back in 2020. They've now take over our Redondo Beach location, and we're just up in Ventura County. So it will be interesting to see if I can continue. All I need to do is continue trying to figure out what the next, plant will be that will make us enough money to support our family that we have. I consider anybody that joins Performance to have an additional secondary family and take care of them. So,
yeah.
Well, for sure, having a good backup group, I mean, that's what makes it work every single time. So, Tom, let me give you an opportunity here, because even though we have a worldwide audience, for sure, we have a lot of local Southern California listeners. So if any of them would have a question for you, they want to find out more about Performance Nursery, tell us about that.
Sure. So Fernando actually operates the Performance Gardens. It's a retail wholesale up in Ventura County. It's right on the 118. And so we grow our own plants. So we do a pretty good job at that. But there's many other people that work in our organization. It's the performance nursery aspect of it. We were down in Southern California for over probably 40 years, starting down in Long Beach and then moving up to Redondo and eventually just being home in Ventura County at this point. I would like to see people, if they could just reach out to me, and I'm not sure if you could provide my email address of tom@performancenursery.com. I would love to know what they think is the next trend that they see. You know, I know that Mediterranean at one point meant, you know, palm trees, and then it went to olives and Italian cypresses. You know, where do they see the future? Those young architects that are going to make a difference in the communities, what would they like to see performance grow in the future? We just, sometimes we're on a need-to-know basis. Our industry dreams these, you know, concepts up, but they really don't contact the people growing the plant material. So not only myself, but other people in the green industry, meaning the nursery business, would love to know, you know, where the shortages are, what, you know, what the new trends are going to be, what do they see that, you know, because it should be all about them, because they're the ones working with the clients, figuring out what the client wants, needs. And so I'd love to be part of the solution.
Well, I'll tell you, great insights for sure, Tom. And, you know,
absolutely.
Appreciate you sharing some of those with us. And Tom Lucas, Performance Nursery, thanks for being on the Water Zone.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Research shows you're about 10 times more likely to close a deal with an existing customer than a new one. And with water regulations on the rise, it's never been easier to upsell efficient irrigation systems to your customers. Upselling to your current customer base can provide them with the best products for their lawn while growing your business. This is the best time to seize this opportunity. We'll walk you through 5 ways to help you leverage water regulations to upsell to your customers. First, offer to audit your customers' systems. This can generate additional revenue through maintenance while offering the opportunity to discuss upgrades to their current systems. Additionally, offering audits can help strengthen your customer relationships in the long run. Next, talk to your customers about water regulations in your state. As laws around water regulations continually shift, it's important to keep them informed and their systems up to date. If their current systems don't comply with regulations, you can use the opportunity to sell them on more efficient systems. If your state isn't currently mandating water regulations, it could be in the future. You can set your customers and your business ahead of the curve by promoting efficient irrigation systems now. Next, communicate the benefits of smarter products to your customers. Recommend products that are easy to program and operate, and simple to install. Wi-Fi-based smart controllers, rain sensors, and weather stations can give your customers peace of mind, knowing their systems auto-adjust watering schedules based on weather and soil conditions. Talk to your customers about how they can have a great-looking lawn while saving water. PRS rotors and sprays can manage water pressure fluctuations and provide full coverage. Additionally, high-performance nozzles and drip and micro-irrigation can keep lawns healthy through high winds and drought. Promoting these products to your customers is another way to increase your revenue while keeping your customers' water bills down. Last, find a partner you can rely on. SiteOne is here to help your business thrive with smart, quality products, in-branch experts, and online resources. We're right here with you every step of the way. SiteOne can help you turn these regulations into opportunities to grow your business and boost your bottom line. Learn how you can take your business to the next level. Stop by SiteOne to talk with an in-branch expert or visit siteone.com/savewater. SiteOne, growth starts here.
All right, so Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Show, and we got Ms. Chris Austin, the board. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We had some technical problems again, and it's from an outside source, not the studio.
We're doing it old school, Chris, and we're doing it kind of backwards, right, with the featured guest section first, and then Maven's Notebook, the California Water News second. But we'll get through it.
So
yeah,
tell
what's
us
next?
What's going on
they
this week?
Show up to the studio.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest news out there?
Well, I guess the thing that's got everybody going, and this almost ties in with the ad that was just on, is that the State Water Board released a second draft of these regulations that they're trying to put into place called the Making Conservation a California Way of Life. They took a shot at the first round of regulations, and the water agencies just, said it was just way too onerous. There were a lot of issues with reporting, that the reporting requirements were going to, take up a lot of staff time at the water agencies, and the trying to get customers to participate in all these water conservation programs is too difficult. And it's all very, very expensive. So the Water Board has responded by kind of loosening them up a little bit, loosening up the restrictions. But those that really push for water conservation are very unhappy about the changes. They feel that, they should be as strong as they were first written. There is a workshop that will happen next Wednesday where they'll be taking a lot of public comments. So it'll be interesting to see where it lands in this round.
Yeah. I was there for that meeting that they had at Metropolitan Water District and talked about all of this. And it was it wasn't a very good meeting. We had people from Irvine Ranch Water and a bunch of other places complaining. They said, look, we spent millions of dollars to get down to, less than 25% to help reduce the water. And to do what they ask is going to cost so much more money and time. And it was just different people. And they were not happy from that meeting. The meeting was supposed to be a three-hour meeting, and it went more like six.
There were just a lot of issues. Like part of it is just the data that they were going to be using. They did satellite flyovers of all the cities in California and then mapped out all the vegetation on all the lots and all the houses and the vegetation in the medians and empty lots. And they had a very complicated formula and a lot of discussion about areas that they called them irrigable, not irrigated, meaning you could water them, you could put something there, but they're not being used for that right now.
Right.
So there was just a lot of concern about the numbers, the numbers that were being generated.
Yeah. I can tell you it was a very difficult meeting, a contentious meeting between the Water Board and a lot of water agencies and the wholesalers. So it's going to be a big fight because it's going to cost everybody millions of dollars.
Millions.
Yeah, they're going to the only way they're going to get the money is pass it on to the consumers. That's the bad part.
And part of it too is that in Southern California and areas that are relatively affluent, nobody likes to absorb the cost, but there's potential there. It's the disadvantaged communities that have very little, they're in poor shape already, and the only way they would be able to comply would be to just shut off the irrigation. So all these poorer towns, disadvantaged communities, will just become brown, barren, landscape.
Yeah.
A lot of concerns.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I noticed a couple of articles on Maven's Notebook this week about wet weather, right, and turning into spring and all that kind of stuff. Primary question for you, did you guys up there in Northern California get in on those winds at all?
We did have some wind, but it really was not it was not terrible. Did you have big winds down there in Southern California?
I'm not in Southern California today, so because I'm right here sitting right next to Rob. In Arizona. I'm right here. I'm sitting next to Rob in Arizona. But my wife sent me some pictures this morning. I mean, we had 30, 35 mile an hour steady winds and gusts to 50 and 55 miles per hour in Southern California, what they term the Santa Anas. And it's one of the it is the biggest windstorm of the season so far. So we did have those. So if you didn't get too much of it, you are going to get in on some of the warmer weather coming our way. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Here it comes. We have blue skies, and it's warming up already today, up to 70 degrees. So the warming trend continues, which is, not a surprise because February was, again, smashed all the climate records, the hottest global temperature since we started keeping records. So, I just think it's going to be a hot, hot, hot summer. And speaking of hot temperatures, there was some research that came out where they were looking at the effect of climate change on crop water use. And what they found is something which I've been talking about for a while now. The hotter temperatures increase what's called evapotranspiration. That's how much water the plant uses to grow and to stay alive. And that is increasing the amount of water that it takes for the plant to, get the water that they need. They now need more. They're thirstier. And this is a problem that we had with our modeling. Our models did not really understand the effect of heat and how that was going to affect evapotranspiration and plant use. And it's just not plants in the field. This is your grass, your garden, the trees, all the plants on the landscape are using more water to grow and to stay alive. And this is the big problem with the hotter temperatures.
I see. I'm gonna switch, and I'm gonna ask you a question about Sykes Reservoir because they got some additional funding, as I understand, Chris, couple hundred million, something like that.
Yeah, they have really put together quite a bit of funding for Sykes Reservoir. I think if they are not completely funded, they must be very close. This is a reservoir that has a lot of support from the locals. It's an off-stream reservoir, so it's not blocking a creek or a river, so its environmental impacts are less. They're going to have to pump water up to it and back to the river when they take water out of it, but this is the kind of project that we've been talking about that we need for these different storms that we're having with climate change, these atmospheric rivers that come in and dump a tremendous amount of water on the floor, on the valley floors, really, in California. And they don't always make it up into the mountains to, create rain and snow above our big reservoirs that we have. So they're dumping it on the valley floor. So Sykes Reservoir would be taking advantage of those storms, and when the flows are high, it would take water from the Sacramento River and put it in the reservoir to be, taken out at a later date. I think it's a very promising project. I think it's likely it will go through, although, like all water storage projects, like all water projects in California, it has components. But I think that that in the long run it will go through, because I do think that it has a lot of support, and it is the kind of project that the scientists are telling us that we need to have.
Yeah, they've been pretty successful so far, and you know, we had one of the project managers on the show way back when. I guess it was maybe a year and a half ago,
yeah.
And you know, they're excited about it, and you're right, it does serve a great purpose, and it's not going to really bother the environment a lot or anything like that. So, I think it's a good personally, I think it's a good idea and project that they move forward. I'm glad they got some more additional funding. I don't know how much more they need, but I'm sure.
They must be getting pretty close. They've been working at it for quite a while.
Yeah, and the last round of funding was, just as you say, Rob, I believe I read it on Mavis' notebook, as a matter of fact, Chris, and it was $205 million. So they get pretty close. But, you know, let me ask you another question then regarding Colorado, the Colorado River, because a lot of these recent storms, the wet ones that came in this last month, have really dumped some snow into the Rockies. So just listening to a podcast by one of our colleagues in the industry, and they were saying that they believe that the Colorado River system, you know, the whole system itself and the reservoirs on that, which haven't fared as well as the California reservoir system, as you know, Chris. But we think these they're saying that these recent storms are going to give a boost to those reservoirs on the Colorado River system. Have you heard anything similar?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, sure, they're going to, you know, precipitation falling on the landscape is always, you know, will hopefully always end up in the reservoirs. And certainly the snowpack in the Rockies, but people need to realize that the reservoirs on the Colorado River are massive. California's reservoirs are tiny in comparison. So California's reservoirs can refill in a wet season, as we saw. That's just not possible on the Colorado River. And if it were to occur, then we would all need ARCs, I think.
Someone was telling me that Lake Powell and Lake Mead together are larger than the cumulative millions of cubic feet in all the California reservoirs.
Oh yeah, it's very tiny. Things will help. Every drop that flows into that reservoir, into those Colorado reservoirs, are spoken for, wanted, desired, accounted for. So you know, it will help certainly a little bit, but no one should expect that it's going to solve the problem, because that problem is very unlikely to be solved in terms of reservoirs filling up. You know, we're not likely to see that again in our lifetime.
Let me ask Chris a question. As he was driving here from California, and when you passed the aqueduct, was it really low still?
No, it was full.
It was full? Wow.
Yeah, the aqueducts were full. I'm obviously with an interest in it. I look for those things. In fact, slow down just so I could see it better. Yeah. So anything happening on the Delta conveyance? I mean, there's just not been much talk about that. We haven't discussed it on the show very much, Chris. anything new happening, or is it just sort of in a, you know, stable, stagnant?
Well, they're queuing up the lawsuits. I mean, they finished the final environmental impact statement and they certified it. So then they had 30 days to protest, and so plenty of folks did do that. And so now we'll see how things wind their way through the legal system. I was actually kind of amazed because I was listening to a meeting. The Delta Stewardship Council had a meeting inside the Delta in a little room right there in a town called Walnut Grove, and they had a Delta conveyance update. Someone from DWR came in to update on the project, and they had no public comment, which is just stunning to me. But, you know, that's how they have operated this project this time going through. They have done that what is required of them, but they have not kept, they have not put out a lot of stuff for people to get stirred up about. So it's almost kind of like it's flying under the radar, you know. And just the fact that they could have a meeting there in town and no one shows up to comment is I was stunned. I was stunned.
Wow. So what else is new up in your territory with the weather?
Well, we're looking at this nice day, a little bit of a breeze. It's been great here. The weather is nice. The reservoirs are reasonably good. So, yeah, we're doing well. You know, they had an article in today's Daily Digest about how some small farmers are feeling like people are using stigma against them. That's what the headline says. It's a story about a very complicated groundwater basin in parts of the San Joaquin Valley. They have large clay pans underneath in the surface. And on this particular basin, they actually have three separate aquifers separated by these large sections of clay. And depending on how deep your well is what aquifer that you are in. And so they're setting different groundwater allocations for these three different tiers, and those that are getting the least are very unhappy about it. And these aquifers actually act rather independently of each other. They're not connected hydrologically, so that's why they have these three different allocations. But that's what that's what they're trying to work out. Implementing the groundwater law is going to be very difficult.
I know. I was reading stories about the ag portion. People up there, farmers, are just in uproar about it. And they want some relief, and nobody's helping them, unfortunately.
Hey, Chris, we appreciate you being adaptive today and switching around the schedule to have you on the second half instead of the first half. How does it feel to be second?
Pardon?
How does it feel to be second instead of first?
Oh, hey, I'm number two. Yay!
Chris, you're still number one. To what?
Aw, well, thanks, guys.
Well, Chris, I want to tell our listeners, if you haven't gone to davisnotebook.com, you can out on the next you can on food for water. And you can become a subscriber. You can also become a sponsor. It's a great way to get your information on your PC, on your handheld, your phone, whatever. You get it every single day. And again, we don't know how you do it. I think you have a bunch of elves that work all night long behind the scenes and you don't tell us about, because I can't see how one person get that much data out in one night. And plus you attend, attend all these meetings. So too bad. So. Anyway, Chris, thanks a lot. We will talk to you next week. You have a great weekend, and stay dry.
Okay, good evening, everyone.
Good night.
And the most important thing, Chris, and I want to tell all our listeners, it's very important, please help
keep our planet blue.
If you like green, you got to have blue.
Good night, everybody.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932, protecting the future of working families. Teamsters1932.org.
This is KCAA.